Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
Businessman Donald Trump has become the de facto Republican Party presidential nominee after all other opponents withdrew from the competition. Ohio Governor John Kasich was the last candidate to suspend his campaign. Texas Senator Ted Cruz did the same Tuesday night following Trump's huge win in the nominating election in the state of Indiana. Cruz told supporters that his path toward victory has been foreclosed and that voters have chosen another path. Donald Trump has never held public office. When he announced his plan to run for president on June 16, 2015, few Americans considered him a serious candidate. He was the 12th person to enter the Republican contest. In all, there were 17 candidates seeking that party's presidential nomination. Trump was the best known among Americans. He was the host of a TV reality show called The Apprentice for many years. The show had 28 million viewers its first season. Trump has more than 7 million followers on the social media site Twitter. Trump spoke about unemployment in the United States. He said China, Japan, and Mexico had taken U.S. jobs. He criticized Mexico and other Latin American countries, which he said were sending illegal immigrants to the United States. "They're bringing drugs, they're bringing crime, they're rapists," he said. Trump promised to build a great wall to keep them out, and that he will have Mexico to pay for that wall. For the next 10 months, Trump spread his message and attacked opponents on television, radio, and social media. He made many incendiary comments about issues and other politicians. Trump criticized Senator John McCain for being taken as a prisoner of war in Vietnam. Many Americans consider the 2008 Republican candidate for president a hero. But Trump disagreed. "He's not a war hero. I like people who weren't captured," he said. Trump made other sharp criticisms against his opponents. He accused Senator Ted Cruz of lying. He called Senator Rubio of Florida "Little Marco." Both Republicans and Democrats condemned Trump when he called for banning all Muslims from the United States. The comments do not seem to affect Republican voters. A Gallup poll in February reported that Republicans support Trump because he is outspoken, strong, and not a career politician. One by one, Trump's opponents left the race after losses in the primaries and caucuses. Trump's opponents sharply attacked him. Some called for changes to how delegates are awarded. Rince Priebus is the head of the Republican Party. After Trump's Indiana victory, he tweeted that Trump will be the presumptive nominee. He called for party unity to defeat Hillary Clinton. Matt Dalek is a professor at George Washington University's Graduate School of Political Management. He wonders if Republicans will follow Priebus's call for unity. He says the chairman of the RNC coming out and saying he's the presumptive nominee is not insignificant, but that doesn't necessarily persuade Jeb Bush and Ted Cruz and John Kasich and the Lindsey Grahams of the world to endorse him or to certainly appear on the convention stage. Dalek added, "It's hard to imagine Ted Cruz endorsing him after all of the things that he said about Trump. Cruz had called Trump a pathological liar and accused him of repeatedly cheating in his marriages. U.S. Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama is among leading Republicans who support Trump. New Jersey Governor and former candidate Chris Christie is another. Christie campaigned for the businessman after he dropped out of the race himself. U.S. Senator Lindsey Graham was also a candidate for the Republican nomination. He wrote, "If we nominate Trump, we will get destroyed, and we will deserve it." Jay Caruso writes for the conservative blog Red State. He wrote that asking for unity behind Trump is to ask people to betray their most closely held beliefs and values. Caruso added, "Trump is the opposite of all things Republican and conservative." Some Republicans went even further to announce support for the likely Democratic nominee, Hillary Clinton. Mark Salter was a longtime advisor to Republican Senator John McCain. Salter tweeted that the GOP is going to nominate for president a guy who reads the National Enquirer and thinks it's on the level. I'm with her. Paul Helmke is a professor at Indiana University Bloomington's School of Public and Environmental Affairs. He said, "Trump's victory has shocked the entire political establishment." He told VOA, "I think what's happened is that a lot of folks think that government isn't working for them. Government isn't effective anymore. They're angry. They want somebody who promises that they can make a difference, and Trump's somebody who says, I can make the deal, I can make this happen, and I think that's what he's tapping into."
South Korea has warned its citizens around the world to be on guard against the possibility of new kidnappings by North Korea. Brian Lin brings us this report.
South Korea is warning its citizens to be on guard against possible North Korean attempts to kidnap South Koreans overseas. South Korea's foreign ministry made the warning after the group defection of 13 North Koreans in China last month. North Korea has accused South Korean spies of kidnapping the 13 individuals, all women, who were working at a restaurant in eastern China. The North has demanded the return of its citizens and threatened to take action. South Korea has directed its foreign embassies around the world to be cautious about possible kidnappings or terror attacks. Go Myung-hyung is a research fellow at the Asian Institute for Policy Studies in Seoul. He told VOA that, in the past, many South Korean fishermen were kidnapped, usually for propaganda purposes.
Oftentimes what happens to South Koreans, first, when they arrive, they have a major press conference announcing their defection to North Korea.
Go Myung-hyung said that the North Korean media then makes it appear that the South Koreans defected to the North voluntarily. He added that some South Koreans kidnapped by North Korea are later trained as spies to go out and capture other South Koreans. Go Myung-hyung said the kidnappers often are North Korean spies who appear to be South Koreans. The spies try to lure people with promises of jobs or learning opportunities, he said. Nearly 30,000 North Koreans are estimated to have sought asylum in South Korea since the signing of an armistice agreement. The treaty ended fighting in the 1950-1953 Korean War. Tens of thousands of South Koreans were abducted by North Korea during the war. South Korean officials believe several hundred are still being held in the north. Tensions between the two sides have risen since North Korea carried out an underground nuclear weapons test at the beginning of the year. North Korea plans to hold a rare meeting of the North Korean Workers' Party later this week in Pyongyang. It will be the first party congress in nearly 40 years. Go Myung-hyun said he does not believe South Korea's warning is directly related to the start of the meeting. I'm Brian Lin.
Two asylum seekers set themselves on fire at an Australian detention camp on the small Pacific island of Nauru. Mario Ritter tells us more.
A 21-year-old Somali refugee is critically injured after setting herself on fire on Nauru, a tiny South Pacific republic. Australia operates a detention camp on the island. Some people are criticizing Australia for its refugee policy. However, Australia has said refugee supporters are putting pressure on migrants to harm themselves for the attention it will bring. The 21-year-old refugee Hodan Yassin has been taken to a hospital in the Australian city of Brisbane. She is in critical condition after setting herself on fire Monday. Refugee advocates say the injured woman was distressed after she was sent back to the South Pacific island. Before this incident, she had received medical treatment in Australia for injuries from a road accident. Last week, a 23-year-old Iranian asylum seeker died after he set himself on fire at the migrant center on Nauru. It is one of two camps operated by Australia as part of a policy to stop asylum seekers from reaching its northern waters by boat. Even if detainees are found to be refugees, they are not permitted to resettle in Australia. Australian Greens Party Senator Sarah Hanson-Young says her country is not supporting people who need help.
These are people who have had their claims assessed, they've been found to be refugees, therefore they deserve to be looked after and given an opportunity to rebuild their lives. We shouldn't be having them languishing on Nauru even now, let alone for years and years to come. We should end this suffering and bring these people to Australia and allow them to get on with their lives.
Australian Immigration Minister Peter Dutton has accused refugee supporters of increasing tensions on Nauru. He says they have encouraged migrants to take extreme measures to try to force Australia to change its border protection policies. Australia sends asylum seekers trying to reach Australia by sea to either Manus Island in Papua New Guinea or to Nauru. Officials in the capital, Canberra, say the policy has reduced the steady flow of migrants trying to reach Australia by boat. Last week, the government of Papua New Guinea said it would close the Australian facility on Manus Island after the country's Supreme Court ruled it illegal. Also, media reports say a boat carrying Sri Lankan asylum seekers has arrived on the Cocos Islands, an Australian territory in the Indian Ocean. If the arrival is confirmed, it would be the first refugee ship to have reached Australian waters in almost 2 years. I'm Mario Ritter.
One California company is holding an auction for music lovers. Items like John Lennon's handwritten song lyrics and a jacket worn by the lead singer of Queen will be for sale. Bruce Alpert has this story.
Hundreds of things belonging to rock and roll musicians will be offered to the public at an auction later this month. Julian's Auctions is holding the event on May 21st at Hard Rock Cafe in New York City. The company is based in California and specializes in selling objects from or related to the entertainment industry. Music lovers might be interested in a document containing song lyrics handwritten by John Lennon. Also available for sale is a note from Kurt Cobain, former frontman of the rock group Nirvana. In it, he discussed the possibility of the band breaking up. Cobain expressed anger about a magazine report about him and his wife, rocker Courtney Love. The 1992 Vanity Fair story said that the two were using drugs during Love's pregnancy. "I love my wife and soon-to-be new daughter too much to let everyone's low opinions of us ruin our lives together," he wrote. Cobain killed himself in 1994, and Nirvana broke up. Many people still mourn the musician more than 20 years later. His letter is expected to sell for between $20,000 and $30,000. There will be many other objects related to rock stars available at the auction. These include clothes, guitars, and mail to and from their fans. Lennon's handwritten lyrics and notes are for the song Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite. It was part of the Beatles' 1967 record album, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Some observers expected the Lennon writings to sell for between $300,000 and $500,000. Martin Nolan of Julian's Auctions said anything written by Lennon is highly sought by collectors. Lady Gaga's first piano is also expected to sell for a huge amount. Part of the money is to go to the singer's Born This Way Foundation. Julian's Auctions also expect to make a nice profit on a red and white rock soldier jacket. Freddie Mercury, the lead singer of Queen, wore it during the band's 1986 tour. Nolan called the jacket a great conversation piece. He added that investors see these items as cool, but also really great opportunities to increase your investment, because over time, chances are they will appreciate in value, he said. I'm Bruce Alpert.
A 5-year-old Afghan boy, who became world famous earlier this year, has fled his country because of safety concerns. A photograph of Murtaza Ahmadi first appeared on the internet in January. He was wearing a homemade soccer jersey that looked like the one worn by Lionel Messi, the Argentinian soccer star. The boy's brother made the shirt from a blue and white striped plastic bag. The bag had the name Messi and number 10 written on the back. The photograph spread quickly on the internet. Eventually, Messi himself heard about the boy and sent him a soccer ball and signed jerseys. The story seemed to have a happy ending. But after the news spread, the Ahmadi family started receiving threatening telephone calls and even a letter from the Taliban. The Associated Press says the Taliban have yet to comment on the boy's case. Murtaza's father said, at first, he was not sure who was responsible for all of the phone calls. At first, he thought it might have been criminals who falsely thought the family made a lot of money from the boy's fame. About 1 month ago, the family of eight quietly fled to Pakistan. They left behind all of their belongings. They are currently living in a one-room house in the city of Quetta. But Murtaza Ahmadi has not given up on soccer. Some days, the boy goes to a nearby field to play a game with his family. His father adds that Murtaza still hopes that one day he will be able to meet his hero, Lionel Messi.
People who love Star Wars movies do not need a reason to leave a photograph or message on social media. On any given day, you might see Star Wars-related photos all over Facebook and Twitter. There might be a cat made to look like Darth Vader, or a dog in what appears to be the clothing of a stormtrooper. Anytime a Star Wars video comes out online, people watch it. Look at the trailer for the next Star Wars movie, Rogue One. It came out in April. Just a month later, it has over 35 million views on YouTube. Star Wars fans do not need a reason to celebrate. But every year, they have a special day anyway. And that day is May 4th. Do you know why? Perhaps the most famous saying from all of the Star Wars movies is, "May the Force be with you." On May 4th, people have fun saying, "May the Force be with you." The two sayings sound nearly the same. That is why May 4th is known as Star Wars Day. And the hashtag May the 4th be with you is trending on Twitter. By Wednesday afternoon, that hashtag was used almost 600,000 times. Many businesses hoping to promote their products used the hashtag. Volkswagen posted a photo of one of its famous VW buses as one of the AT-AT walkers from the 1980 film The Empire Strikes Back. One Twitter user, Mish Lipman of England, wished everyone Happy Star Wars Day, or as we call it, a standard day in our house. Star Wars Day leads to all sorts of visual humor. Sports teams use photo editing software to make it look as if their players were in the movies. Perhaps a tennis player or golfer holds a lightsaber instead of a racket or golf club. But this photo from London's Heathrow Airport may have been the best of the day. It shows the famous Millennium Falcon spaceship sitting next to airplanes. And that's what's trending today. I'm Anna Mateo. May the Force be with you.
We all have daily problems with technology, but how many of us can fix them? Mia Leitai is a scientist studying at the University of California, Irvine. She recently discovered a process that may result in batteries that last forever. VOA Learning English spoke with Tai about her discovery. Tai said she had been frustrated that the batteries for her wireless devices degrade. Over time, they fail to charge fully. Tai did not like to have to keep her wireless laptop connected to an electrical outlet. She decided to do something about that problem. At first, she and her team at UC Irvine thought about inventing a new battery. But as they experimented, Tai discovered something that might permit lithium-ion batteries to last forever. Lithium-ion batteries power most wireless devices. Over time, the batteries lose the ability to hold a charge. Most of these batteries have a lifespan of about 7,000 charging cycles before they die. One of the reasons lithium-ion batteries degrade is their use of nanowires to carry electricity. Nanowires are extremely thin. A human hair is thousands of times thicker, for example. Nanowires are extremely efficient carriers of electricity, which makes them useful in batteries. But Tai said their thinness also makes them weak. Nanowires break and fracture over time, she said. That's why they lose capacity. But Tai had a theory. The nanowires might last longer if covered with a gel. She and the team tested her theory. It was a long process and a lot of work, Tai said. The team tried many coverings for the wires. PMMA was one of them. The nanowires were coated with PMMA and cycled through charges 200,000 times. The PMMA-coated nanowires showed no evidence of damage. The results suggest that batteries could last forever without losing charging ability. Tai said 200,000 cycles amount to about 3 months on just one device. Tai hopes to continue her research to understand why this gel works so well and to see if any other gel could create better results. Mia Leitai told VOA she is enjoying the publicity about her discovery. She said she never expected her research to get media coverage. It's kind of cool, she said. I'm really glad people are showing interest in my work, and not just in the work itself, but also in technology and energy. I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.